life. And I shifted restlessly. The dark implications of this statement sent a chill of nameless apprehension trickling down my spine. I know the country people always claimed that in his youth he sold his soul to the devil, and that his sudden epileptic attacks were merely a visible sign of the fiend's power over him. But such talk is foolish, of course, and belongs in the Dark Ages. We all know that John Grimlin's life was a peculiarly evil and vicious one, even toward his last days. With good reason he was universally detested and feared, for I never heard of his doing a single good act. You were his only friend. And that was a strange friendship, said Conrad. I was attracted to him by his unusual powers, for despite his bestial nature, John Grimlin was a highly educated man, a deeply cultured man. He had dipped deep into occult studies, and I first met him in this manner, for as you know, I have always been strongly interested in these lines of research myself. But in this, as in all other things, Grimlin was evil and perverse. He had ignored the white side of the occult and delved into the darker, grimmer phases of it, into devil worship and voodoo and Shintoism. His knowledge of these foul arts and sciences was immense and unholy, and to hear him tell of his researches and experiments was to know such horror and repulsion as a venomous reptile might inspire. For there had been no depths to which he had not sunk, and some things he only hinted at, even to me. I tell you, Kirwan, it is easy to laugh at tales of the black world of the unknown when one is in pleasant company under the bright sunlight. But had you sat at ungodly hours in the silent, bizarre library of John Grimlin and looked on the ancient, musty volumes and listened to his grisly talk as I did, your tongue would have cloven to your palate with sheer horror as mine did, and the supernatural would have seemed very real and near to you, as it seemed to me. But in God's name, man, I cried, for the tension was growing unbearable, come to the point and tell me what you want of me.
I want you to come with me to John Grimlin's house and help carry out his outlandish instructions in regard to his body.
I had no liking for the adventure, but I dressed hurriedly, an occasional shudder of premonition shaking me. Once fully clad, I followed Conrad out of the house and up the silent road which led to the house of John Grimlin. The road wound uphill, and all the way, looking upward and forward, I could see that great grim house perched like a bird of evil on the crest of the hill, bulking black and stark against the stars. In the west pulsed a single dull red smear where the young moon had just sunk from view behind the low black hills. The whole night seemed full of brooding evil, and the persistent swishing of a bat's wing somewhere overhead caused my taut nerves to jerk and thrum. To drown the quick pounding of my own heart, I said, "Do you share the belief so many hold? That John Grimlin was mad?" We strode on several paces before Conrad answered, seemingly with a strange reluctance.
"But for one incident, I would say no man was ever saner. But one night in his study, he seemed suddenly to break all bonds of reason. He had discoursed for hours on his favorite subject, black magic, when suddenly he cried, as his face lit with a weird, unholy glow, 'Why should I sit here babbling such child's prattle to you? These voodoo rituals, these Shinto sacrifices, feathered snakes, goats without horns, black leopard cults, bah! Filth and dust that the wind blows away! Dregs of the real unknown, the deep mysteries, mere echoes from the abyss! I could tell you things that would shatter your paltry brain. I could breathe into your ear names that would wither you like a burnt weed. What do you know of Yog-Sothoth, of Cthulhos, and the sunk